everyone, and welcome to the podcast that every week brings you stories of magic, mystery, and miracle. And this week's episode is no exception, because my guest, Araceli Kopoloff, has quite a few stories to share with you. Now, to be honest, after I interviewed her, I realized that she, in fact, and the spirit of her family and their legacy is actually part of the miracle too. Just knowing she's in the world and moving forward, as you'll hear, inspired me to no end. Please do pay attention, because there is quite the Easter egg at the end of the outro where she shares some more of the work she's doing, and yes, another miracle moment. So without further ado, here's my very next episode with Araceli Kopoloff.
I had to pull over because I was hyperventilating and I was having a panic attack. And out of nowhere, this lady came and she goes, you know, in Spanish, come here. And she was so little. And she put my head on her shoulder and she was caressing my head. And she was like, it's okay, you're going to be fine. And I was like, you know, and she's like, it's okay. I would describe myself as a survivor, somebody who cannot be put down. I think that if the end of the world came and there was just like the bomb, it would be like three cockroaches in me. That's what it would be. And I would have red lipstick, because that's what I had in my emergency kit, my earthquake kit in San Francisco. I had money, chocolate, and red lipstick. But sometimes I need the money and I take it out. Sometimes I take the chocolate, but the lipstick, because if they're filming and they're showing survivors, I don't want to look so pale. Yeah. And no, but seriously, reinvention, because I thought I had a career that I studied for. But before, people had careers for decades, right? Like, I'm a designer for decades, or I'm a this or that, but then industries change and I had to change so many times. So then I had new careers and it was just so exciting. So I think a survivor, Renaissance woman.
Oh,
and cockroach.
And cockroach. I have to say, it's been really fun just seeing your following you and seeing your exploits, shall we say. And, you know, I know a little bit about you because we have a mutual friend who's kind of, you know, told me a lot about you. And you spent years, well, she just told me the other day that you were a model for years, which I totally understand. But she also said that you were in the fashion industry. And so I'm wondering, when you were a kid, were you drawn towards fashion? How did that happen?
Fake news. I wasn't really a model. I modeled like for Issey Miyake once, but it was during school. I don't identify as that. I studied fashion design, but you know, when I'm 5'10". So if there's a show, I'm not thinking I'm perfect, but you know, I'll do it because I love it. But no, since I was a kid, my father was a doctor. My mother didn't work. And I just had it in my head. They said that it was an ordeal. I'll send pictures. I have pictures of me at the park and I'm wearing a red blazer with gold buttons, patent leather shoes, sitting down watching the kids. And they would say, go play in the sand. And I would say, I am not a cat. And it was always an ordeal. Like, we're going to the beach. I needed matching hat and bag and shoes. And I would steal magazines, and I just was always obsessed. I loved it. And I loved color. One time I had a teacher, remember Pucci prints in the 70s, like psychedelic prints?
Yeah.
And my teacher was wearing a skirt that had that. This is in Uruguay. I'm from Uruguay.
Okay.
And she leaned in to help me. I was 9 years old. And I said, you shouldn't wear that. It doesn't look good on you. And she was like, excuse me? And I said, it doesn't look good on your body. You should wear black. And then she got closer and I elbowed her. I got in trouble, suspended for hitting a teacher, but it just made me angry. Like, how did I know that?
I mean, also probably the teacher was like, how do you know that? You know,
right. You're 9. Sit down and shut up. You're wearing a uniform, little girl.
Oh, were you? So in school you had to wear uniforms?
Yeah. I went to a little private Baptist school. We weren't Baptist, but it was close by. And, but even in public schools, they wore uniforms, which was really nice, you know, to prevent all the issues that could happen with kids.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. Was that constrictive for you? Were you, I mean, was that, because I would imagine with your eye and your taste and your desire for fashion that having to wear the same thing every day might've driven you a little crazy.
No, it was okay. I liked it because there was plenty of free time. And also what they do in Uruguay is they have morning school or afternoon and you get to choose. So I always went in the morning to get it over with. So I was home by 1 and we lived near the beach so we could go to the beach and have the rest of the day. So that was nice.
Wow.
I mean, and when I moved to the States, I didn't speak a word of English and I skipped 2 grades. And I wasn't a genius. I'm an average person because over there, they teach geography. Math is really advanced. I mean, we had tests in the 2nd grade, learn all the countries and capitals of Europe, South America, Africa. And we'd have to draw on the map. Like they'd give us a map of Europe, put the countries in. And just with what I knew, I skipped 2 grades. And here in the United States, I remember the first time they gave a map of the U.S. and I lived in California, kids couldn't even put where California was. They were just randomly drawing things like Texas was where New York was. It was really bad.
Well, and depressing, right? That's just not a good sign, I think.
No.
Well, I mean, when you were in the, because you were in the fashion arena for a long time, did it just make your soul so happy?
Yes, because let me tell you, it was the good times. The girls younger than me now, I feel sorry for them. They're all secretaries because they don't get to do anything. I studied fashion design and I started in 1990. My first job was in Milan. And then I came back to the U.S., and it was the time where you went in person to a country, right? So if I'm doing this blouse, we'd fly to Hong Kong or mainland China or India or whatever to see the fabric. And then we'd see and say, oh yeah, that dark turquoise is good or brighten it 10%. Now they just send a picture on email, right? And then we go to Europe once a year just to spot trends. So they would tell us, okay, you're going to this neighborhood in London, these neighborhoods in Paris, take pictures, take notes. There were shows that we'd go to and say, oh, okay, well now low rise jeans are popular. We're seeing lots of rhinestones or whatever. But we just did that. Top hotels, first class airplane, come back with pictures and samples. I mean, it was a dream job. Now they're like, get on Instagram and see what the Kardashians are wearing, you know? And so it's sad because they don't get to do that. And we did work really hard. Like when you go to Asia and the meetings and the production, and if you're looking at jeans, the finish has to be done right. You know, they can't rip all the way through and you're dealing with formulas. But it was so worth it because then we had such a great life and restaurants and all that. But now forget it. It's like the Devil Wears Prada too with the cutbacks.
Yeah.
They're not doing, and I don't blame them. If I had a company, what does it cost to send employees first class overseas, you know?
A lot.
So I caught the good old days.
Oh yeah. Yes. I was listening to you and just thinking, what a romantic life. You know,
it was,
you knew every year that you'd be going to Europe.
You knew
it was like something you could count on, and who knew what adventures you'd be having, you know, what.
And sometimes I would take my dog and she did runway. Yes.
What?
I will share the website with you. This one passed away. This little dog, she was 10 or 12 when she passed away, a Boston Terrier, but she was really smart. She could be off leash. She knew commands. And I took her because they, I mean, it's first class, you have room, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And I heard somebody say, oh, we need a dog. And I was like a stage mom, I have a dog. And and she did it. And she was fabulous. And I made lots of connections. And she did modeling for Coach and for, she did music videos. And she had a better career than me at some point. Yeah, I'll send you her website, still live, even though she died like 5 years ago, because I can't get myself to stop paying for it.
Oh my gosh.
She was a legend.
Yeah. You know, at the end of every episode show notes, I have a little thing where I link to a different website. So I'll link to her website so people can check out her work.
You can do a photo essay. I only tell stories for which I have photos, because I have so many stories. And if I don't have proof, I don't talk, because people will say, no, that definitely did not happen. So, yeah.
Well, I like that. I like that. I like to see the proof, but I also like to believe people. Do you go back to Uruguay very often?
I haven't been in like 20 years because I don't have family left. My ex-husband's family's there. We got married really young, so they're like my family. We're like brother and sister. They're great. But, you know, once I started working, it became difficult because it's so far away. It's not touristy. So the tickets are expensive. The seasons are opposite. But that's on my to-do list. I'd love to go and see how it's changed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. The other thing that I just really appreciate about you and that is so fun is where you're living now. You're such a dynamo and you're creating so many incredible things for people, experiences. You know, I just saw your funny post about the turtle and the hare. of, you know, one of your dogs eats like, you know, really, yeah, really fast. And the other one's takes their time.
Oh, the other one is like, he needs herbs from the garden and his food, and he eats at restaurants. I mean, this guy will go 3 days without eating. I bring to-go boxes and I have to make food, put it in the to-go box, put on high heels, make key noises and say, I don't want to say his name. He's sleeping right here. So-and-so, I'm here from the restaurant. They sent you food, and then he'll eat it. But if I make it and I put it in his plate, he won't eat it. And the other one is like me with carbs, just inhales them. I identify with her. Let me tell you about bite-sized miracles.
Okay, yeah.
I had my little dog, Boston Terrier. Her name was Bella, the special one. When she was old, I adopted this other Boston Terrier, Cooper. And I adopted him from a family that had to give him up during COVID because they were moving to a small house and so on. So he's great, but he's the special one with the issues with the food and very snobby. So, but he, and I'll tell you how he led me to my new life. But recently, I said, I'm getting him a dog because he's 7 and maybe he'll loosen up. And I didn't want to buy one, but I thought if I have to, I don't know. And a friend here named Joe Howell, who does amazing work with animal rescue, spaying, neutering, all of that. In my mind, I thought I'm going to get a girl dog because he gets along with girls and I'm going to name her Minnie. So it's Minnie Cooper. And I even made a logo for them. And he tells me, hey, how do you feel about Frenchies? And I said, they're super cute, but they're expensive, health issues. I don't know. And he says, because there's one for adoption. And I said, is it a girl? He said, yes, she's 1. And I said, what? She's in the US, but I can bring her because he goes back and forth to help animals. So he sends me the ad that says that she's for adoption and her name's Minnie.
Stop.
And I was like, that's it. I'm taking her. That is a sign from God. Like, God has to make very specific signs for me because I'm slow. And so he's like, get it. It's your sign. And she's darling. The family that had her was great. She wasn't abused. It was just, it's very costly in the US. you know, and they worked a lot. So she's better off here, but she's lovely because she was never mistreated or anything.
Right, right. Okay, I'm still having problems thinking that you are slow on the uptake or whatever you said, that you're a little
slow. I'm slow on the God signals.
Okay.
But I'm doing better now in my late 50s because sometimes I needed lots of signs before I got it. But now I'm getting it the first time.
Okay.
I went through a lot and my friends say, well, God knows who you are. He knows how much you can take. And I said, well, God has a case of mistaken identity because clearly he has me confused for somebody else. I mean, my name's unusual. You would think he would know, but like enough already. Okay, God, enough.
Yeah, enough. At some point you have to say enough. That's actually really, really funny. I think your name's beautiful, by the way. You have the most beautiful name. Do you know, does it mean anything?
It means altar of heaven because Ara is for altar and Celi, well, it's Celi, Celio. It's the old, you know, Italian way for heaven. So it's altar of heaven.
Oh my gosh. So it's actually, is it an Italian name?
Yeah, it's supposed to be Araceli. But it just in Spanish, it's Araceli. And then when I came to the US, Araceli.
Araceli.
So it's gotten watered down.
Wow. It's a gorgeous name. I don't think I've ever met anyone with that name before. It's really singular and gorgeous. I don't know. It fits you perfectly, I think. You brought up God. I would love to ask the second question, which is, did you grow up in a religious household? What did that look like? And, you know, has that connection to source changed over time?
Well, my family is of Russian Jewish descent. They went to Argentina in the early 1900s and they were Jewish, but my grandparents were not religious. And so my father, when he met my mother, she was Catholic and they found something that suited both of them. You know, like people these days, like if they both decide we're going to be Buddhists or whatever, right? So they became Seventh-day Adventist. They liked the day of rest, the Sabbath. They liked the philanthropic aspect. They liked the healthy, you know, and the shellfish and the pork and all of that. And so I grew up Seventh-day Adventist, and I have to say I'm very thankful because it's too strict for me, so I don't practice it, but they are the best people. And I grew up very grounded, you know, not materialistic. It really made me who I am because my father was a doctor, but he ran a free clinic on Sundays. And so he did that in Uruguay. And ever since I was, I don't know, 5 years old, my job was to gather things throughout the week, whether in school, neighbors, so blankets, clothes, anything. And then I would take that on Sunday with him. And my mother didn't go. She wasn't into that aspect of it. But I saw poverty. I saw the worst. And he, you know, back in the day, doctors would get a ton of samples of medicine. So our garage was like a pharmacy. So he would take like Mrs. So-and-so needs her heart medicine, diabetics, da, da, da. So, and when I saw that kids were so thankful or adults, you know, with a blanket or socks, it made me like, how could I ever be greedy? You know, I couldn't. And that practice really guided me through my difficult times of being able to put that into practice. And so it was, I'm very thankful and healthy, you know, it's a healthy upbringing.
Yeah. I mean,
so being in a blue zone, you know, I grew up mostly when I was a kid in Loma Linda, California, and that's a blue zone.
Oh yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I have to say that I have known many Seventh-day Adventists and they're all remarkable human beings. And
that's good to hear.
Oh yeah. Yeah. When we lived in Pakistan, my mother made friends with another woman at the pool. And it turned out that she and her husband were Seventh-day Adventist and he was a dentist. So he had moved over to Lahore to help.
I worked in Lahore.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Okay. Sorry to interrupt.
No, that's amazing. I was just going to say they moved to Lahore as missionaries, but they didn't try to convert people. They just tried to give free dental care and take care of people over there. Mm-hmm. The level of poverty over there when I was a kid was astonishing, and it changed my entire life to see that. Just like you were saying, it affects you. You know how much you really need. Okay. Tell me about Lahore. Do tell.
Well, it was during the textile industry days, and we had Levi's did a lot of work there. So I went there for work and spent, you know, a couple of weeks at a time. And once you're there, you know, they show you around, and it's so interesting, you know. And this is before 9/11. So we had more freedom, like let's go to a nightclub, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. 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 I, you know, because it was such a pivotal time of my life. And I don't know for you, if you went back to Uruguay, would it just bring back a sense of home, do you think? You know, like the smells and the sights?
I think so, because, yeah, I think so. And the music, and you're right, the olfactory sense is so strong. And, you know, you have like, I don't know, the coffee and the ocean is right there. And I think so. I'd love to go back. I hear it's gotten really cool because Uruguay is very small. It has 3 million population. 3 million.
Oh.
Like the city of Guadalajara, just one city has 8 million. And there's more cows than people. True. And so a lot of youth left, you know? And so it's just, you know, you go to a cafe and it's those old waiters shuffling around like they've been there forever. But now a lot of young people, or, you know, like youngish, like in their 30s, 40s, have gone back. And so they've made cool things.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that sounds so fun. I guess I didn't realize the population there, 3 million people. That's like nothing.
Yeah. It's so small.
Yeah. For a country. So would you just tell my listeners where you live now, and how did that happen that you ended up there?
Oof. Okay. Well, I live in San Miguel de Allende, and anybody who doesn't know, they should Google it, because it's constantly one of the top two cities in the world of beauty and to live. But I only moved here this year. I always wanted to be here, but I moved here this year. What happened was that during COVID, I had been out of the fashion industry for a few years, and I worked for a theater. And theaters closed, and I lived in a theater. It was really beautiful. It was classical music, jazz. It was a dream job. Anyway, I said, I'm going to work here until I'm in my 90s. They're going to have to pry my dead body from here. Like, I loved it. And but it was closed. And this is when we started Zoom and doing, you know, the concerts online and figuring out how to everybody to be synchronized and all of that. So, and I would hold dinners for the members so they wouldn't be lonely, and arrange with restaurants like, okay, have a limited menu and people can drive by and pick it up, and then have music during dinner so people aren't eating online, and then afterwards conversation. So I was doing that, but I asked, can I leave for a few months and do my work from online? And they said, absolutely, we'll pay your salary, don't worry. And I had met a lady, a flight attendant, and she had told me that she was going to move to a place called Ajijic in Mexico. And I had only been to resorts, you know, like growing up. And I never considered Mexico. I love Mexico, love the people, love everything, but it's too hot. And I was like, there's no way. I can't do that. Little did I know there's cities where it's very elevated and very cold, even snow. But anyway, so I looked up Ajijic and I thought, this is kind of old, but I'm not going there to party or date or anything. Like, it's COVID. So I just wanted a garden and a pool, and so that I could work and hunker down, and that's it. So I went, I didn't know one single person. So I went and I got a house for a year, because they didn't have short term. I thought, well, if I leave in 3 months, I'll just lose a deposit. I signed the lease. I had brought 5 suitcases full of things. And then I said, can I leave my things here? Sure. Went back, got 5 more suitcases, got the dog. At that point, I had one, the older one. and moved, but it was supposed to be short term. So this is where it takes a turn for the worse. Like, this is where people should get their tissues. Okay. So I arrive in October, November, December. Still, I met a lot of people. We weren't careless, but people there have very big houses like mine. It was like garden, pool, pool house. So you could have people over and distance, wear masks, be outdoors. Met a lot of people. And then New Year's Eve, I called my dad to say, you know, Happy New Year. But it was so weird because he didn't answer. And I kept calling. Usually if somebody's 86, they're not going to answer. Like even me, if I'm not at a party, I'm going to be in bed at 8. So why is somebody calling me, you know? And so, but I kept calling and I called his cell phone and he answered. And he said, you know, I've been on the floor for a couple of hours. And he's smart. He was sharp. He was Mensa smart. He really was. And he was, his mind was just like talking to a 40-year-old. So it's not like my dad has Alzheimer's. So I thought, well, if he has his phone, why isn't he calling 911? So I didn't want to make him feel bad. So I said, Dad, I'm going to call 911. And he said, well, remember the door code is blah, blah, blah. So they don't knock down the door. So I thought it was weird. They took him in. He was dehydrated. That's why he was confused. And he had COVID. And so he had retired a long time ago, but he went back to work because he was a psychiatrist and he worked with the most difficult veterans, the ones from Vietnam still that would be out like killing people if they weren't medicated. Yeah. And they adored him because they would sit and talk about history and generals and this and that. So to them, it was like coming to talk to a friend, yeah, not like an obligation. And he went back because he loved them so much. So he told me, don't come because you can't even come in the hospital. He said, just come when I get discharged so you can help me if I need to hire a nurse or get a special bed or whatever. Well, he died in 5 days. And he was only on oxygen 20% of the day. And they were already looking at what rehab facility to send them to. So we were very close. My father was, we would talk and text and send pictures. It wasn't a dad where it was an obligation, like, oh, I better call him. It's Christmas. And he was a lifelong Republican who campaigned for Hillary and campaigned for Biden. And he would talk to his patients about politics and tell them not to vote for Trump. And I was like, Dad, you're going to get fired. He's like, I'm 86. What are they going to do? So and he was a feminist and he believed in the women's right to choose. And I was like, Dad, this is so weird because you're Seventh-day Adventist. He goes, if they have no problem putting down an adult, you know, death sentence. He goes, if a woman gets raped, if a woman is a drug addict, nobody's offering help for her baby. She's a prostitute. She's abused. They're saying have the baby. And then what? He goes, if you show me one Republican who's adopting a severely deformed crack baby, then I'll listen. But so far I haven't met any. So I was like, oh my God. He was very progressive. He did like the Women's March, everything. So he was amazing. So I was devastated. But he was, they couldn't bury him for a month because, you know, how it was back then in the thick of things. So I decided not to go for the funeral because it was very, I'm like, why? He wouldn't want me to go. You know, once things get better, I'll go pay my respects. Mm-hmm. So the day of his funeral, I get a call that my son died.
What?
My son, 30 years old. So I can't say it without, you know, so that's when I lost it. I had Bella and Cooper, the two dogs. Typically, if I left, I would have a binder of instructions. I really, really believe people now when they say, hey, I just remembered that I was raped when I was 6 years old or something before. You know, I respect it and believe them, but I thought maybe you're dreaming or something. But you could tell me right now, I will give you $10 million if you tell me what happened on those days. I don't know. All I know is I left my keys to a neighbor and I went to the airport. So I must have gotten my passport. I don't know if somebody took me. I don't know if I took a taxi. I don't know how I got a ticket. Maybe I got it at the airport. And it's not a bus, you know, it's not like, hey, you leave in half an hour. I was crying. I had snot coming out of my mask. I got there with like no clothes, like what I was wearing. And my ex-husband, Claudio, like I said, we're like family. I adore him. And he was a great father. We had to deal with it. And then I don't know, my friends, one of my best friends, Tracy, was there and she helped me so much. I told Claudio, I said, I'm not coming back. Sell my stuff, give it away. She was there holding down the fort. Tracy Lawrence, I'm sending a shout out because she's like a sister to me. And that's it. Because I was so angry at the United States at like, go to work. You know, it's a Chinese flu. It's a, you know, like even in the worst, in 1920s, in a what do you call it, a plague, they would say, cover your mouth with a bandana. Yeah. I mean, come on. So I couldn't take it. So I came back and these dogs saved my life because I really would have ended it. You know, I just laid there and I was like, I don't know how, like they don't allow guns in Mexico, but I will probably kill myself. And so, but when you cry, the dogs come and they cry next to you. They scratch you. They lick you. And it made me get up and throw a ball and talk to them. And slowly, Mexico is so loving. One time I was riding my bike and I had to pull over because I was hyperventilating and I was having a panic attack. And out of nowhere, this lady came and she goes, you know, in Spanish, come here. And she was so little. And she put my head on her shoulder and she was caressing my head. She was like, it's okay. You're going to be fine. I thought, you know, in the United States, nobody would touch me. Nobody would even stop. They would just be like, are you drunk? You know? And I was like, you know, and she's like, it's okay. And it was so funny because one day there was a dedication of a wall. It's like these skulls made of clay for Day of the Dead. But each, you buy one of those and the money goes for a good cause. And when I went to the lighting ceremony, because I got one for my dad and my son, she was sitting in the front row looking at me smiling. And it was like 6 months later, you know, and magical things happen in Mexico. And if I was in the United States, and I consider myself American, so I'm not a hater. I love the United States. I love what it did at the time, but I don't know what would have happened to me. And I got really involved with an orphanage with 23 boys. And I thought, you know, if I don't have one son, I can have 23. And I, you know, worked with them a lot. We accomplished a lot. And I have a goddaughter that's 11, Jaretsi. She's coming here this month to spend summer. And focusing on kids, because one of the things that's helped me with mourning, it's the displaced love. Okay. So if you're used to 5 calls a day, if I'm used to brunch with my son, it's not stopping those habits, but just moving them somewhere else. So now, you know, we all have a budget. Okay.
Yeah.
But if I think, like my son worked, he never asked for money. But if I went to a store and I bought him a coat and shoes because I thought they were cool, I never thought about how much does that cost or he has to pay me back. You do it with pleasure. So I'm like, so why don't I do that now for the boys or for my goddaughter? Checking on people. I have very close friends here that are super supportive and we talk every morning, every night. And it's just not having those things not come to a grinding halt, you know, where you miss it.
Yeah.
So that's the thing that's helped me the most.
Yeah, I just want to say first how sorry I am, you know, about your father. And that was shocking in itself because it sounded like he was getting better. Well, and that people hadn't planned, or the doctors or, you know, whoever was caring for him hadn't planned on him not being there. You know, they were making all these other
plans. No, and it was right before. Yeah, it was before vaccinations, you know, so there was nothing they could do.
Oh, my gosh. And then I can't even imagine that. And that's shocking in itself. But your son, I mean, that is just horrifying.
No, I don't wish that on my worst enemy. And, you know, and everything you see on Facebook, if anybody finds me, it's all true. I laugh all day long. Every day I cry. You know, sometimes it's in the shower. Sometimes it's when I hear a song. So I don't think that'll ever go away. But the important thing, I love Anderson Cooper's podcast, All There Is. That's helped me a lot. So that, and then doing what I do, keep on moving, pushing myself, because I could just lay on a couch. You should have, I mean, if you post any pictures or regarding this, I mean, I look like, I don't know what I look like. I cut off all my hair at one point, not to be dramatic, but I just was like, oh, I'm going to cut this and this and this. And it kept being wrong. And I look crazy. I had deep bags. I looked like a different person. And so what I do now is every year I do one big thing to celebrate life. So for example, when I was in Turkey last year, I did those photo shoots called Infinity Dress or Goddess Dress. And I did that in red. And I told some friends about it that were on this trip, and they were like, oh, I don't know. And they all did it and they all loved it. They said it was like the top favorite thing in their life. And the year before I did it in Morocco, holding a camel and just a dream photo shoot, because I think my son and my dad would get such a kick out of me. They were like, oh my God, you're so dramatic. And so they would not want to see me weighing 500 pounds crying on a couch, you know? So I do these things to celebrate life for the ones who can't. And I always push my, because they always pushed me, you know, and they always said, yeah, you could do it. You know, one of the most valuable lessons I had from my dad, which I hope it helps other people, is he would always tell me, you already have the no. So go for the yes, anything, whatever it is. He goes, what's there to be afraid of? So you go for a job that you think you can't get. You already don't have the job. So if you get it, right, you're ahead. I mean, I'm not an actress, but if I had the opportunity I'd go. I don't care. I mean, big deal. When people say you're rejected, no, I'm not rejected. I'm back to where I started. I'm not an actress. So maybe I'll get it, you know, like. So he would do that. And everything I did was so daring because of that, you know? So I follow that rule and I'm like, why not? You know, like my friend Tracy went on that photo shoot in Morocco, two other girls. Well, one went, the other one chickened out. She was, what if, I'm like, just go for it. Big deal. If you don't like the pictures, don't show anybody, but at least you did it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I do whatever. I just say yes to everything. And if I fail, I tried.
Yeah. 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 Can I ask you, I just get the sense, I mean, obviously we've talked about your father. He's brilliant, a brilliant man, highly intelligent. Were they both, when they were alive, did they just celebrate you and love you up and just love your kind of, I don't know, your effervescence, I guess?
We all were like, we were all very exciting and fun. And like in the 80s, I was really into music, like, you know, new wave music. And my parents would take me to the concerts because we lived in La Molinda, but it was an hour away from LA. So I was like, I want to go see Frankie Goes to Hollywood and Depeche Mode and Culture Club and with my friends. And my parents were so cool. They were like, we're going, we're going to get two hotel rooms. You guys stay here. We'll stay there. They would drive us to the concert, pick us up. So it was a compromise, you know. But one time my friends and I took off and went to a hotel to try to find, I don't know, somebody from Depeche Mode. And we kind of got not arrested, but detained by security. And I started speaking in Spanish. So they're like, why are you doing behind? You know, you're in these corridors. I'm like, no sé lo que está diciendo. Yo soy turista. No entiendo nada. Así que perdón. And my friend, I had to pinch her. I'm like, just don't talk. And then I whispered to her, I'm like, we're going to say you're deaf. You know, she's like, what? And so I would turn around and make signs to her like she was deaf. And they called my dad. They said, we're going to call a translator. So they get a janitor. And we tell that's the translator. So I tell the janitor that we're exchange students and we're staying with this Dr. Kopolov. And they called him and he came and he was like, I will take these exchange students and be sure that they get their punishment. Like he totally rolled with it. He wasn't like, you're in trouble. No, he rolled with it. He could just tell from my face that we were scared, you know? And so he was like that. They would accommodate. And it was great because I still felt like I had my freedom, but you know, it was with limits.
Right. Right.
So it was very, he would totally be with the shenanigans. Now, my mom, on the other hand, I don't talk about her. She was great, but she was more traditional. You're an embarrassment to the family. You know, why are you so crazy? The whole thing. He loved it. Okay. I have to tell you the story. This is the last time I spent with him. I was going to, before I moved to Mexico, I was going to Southern California. And he said, you know, there's a doctor's dinner tonight, but I'm so sorry I couldn't get you invited because it's just for doctors and blah, blah, blah. I said, that's okay, Dad. I'll drive you there. I was going from San Francisco to Southern California. I said, I'll drive you and then I'll just wait. I'll go to a movie or something. So he calls me. He goes, well, just bring nice clothes just in case. So he calls me and says, I got you in. Great. So we go there. There's name tags and it's Dr. George Kopolov, Dr. Araceli Kopolov. So I was a doctor. So he lied for me. So the dinner ends and there's mingling and there's a group of doctors from Pakistan. So my dad can't just let it go. And so they go up to him and they're like, oh, Dr. George, you must be so proud. Your daughter, she's lovely and she's a doctor. And he goes, yes. And she worked in Lahore. I'm like, oh, my God. Like, I'm thinking, stop talking. Like, just I have a name tag. That's it. So he goes, yeah, she worked as a doctor in Lahore. And they're like, oh my goodness, what did you do? And this is me being Meryl Streep, right? I'm like, you know what? It was such a difficult time and I'm pinching my dad. I try to forget, is what I said. I try to forget. And then he goes, yes, she tries to forget. It's almost like she's forgotten, my dad, just going with it, right? So he goes, she was in Doctors Without Borders. And I lean in and I'm like, more like Doctors Without Morals. And he starts cracking up. And they said, well, we're so sorry to bring up a difficult subject. He goes, yeah, it's very difficult. We better change the subject. So he was like that kind of comedy act with me. So it was very difficult because I have some friends that fill that void that are like that, you know, but he was so unique.
I'm kind of into the fact that he was like an improv actor.
Honestly. He was improv. He was hilarious. And he didn't like pictures. He was very handsome and he had light blue eyes and very fit, but he didn't like pictures because he didn't like to see himself age. You know, time flies and suddenly you're. So when people wanted to take a picture, he would say, I'm sorry. I'm a doctor for the CIA and we're not allowed to be in pictures. It's like, it's always a story. It couldn't just be no. Now he's a doctor for the CIA. I was like, you're Adventist. You're not supposed to lie. He would just die laughing. He's like, I'm not lying. He goes, it's just, I'm a storyteller and I'm an entertainer.
We would have gotten along. Do you know where did he get that from? You know,
probably the Jewish side, you know, Jews are hilarious.
Your dad just sounds so humble too. Would you say that was true?
Oh my God, 100%. He never bragged. We never, like, he was so good to workers, always fed them and gave them drinks. And I remember as a kid, when I was on vacation, I'd ride my bike to the hospital where he was at the VA hospital to eat lunch. And sometimes he would be sitting having lunch with the janitor. And I'd sit down and he would just sing their praises. But honestly, not like he would say, you know, for example, Mr. Garcia, meet him. He is an amazing man, a remarkable man. His kids are in college. He's accomplished so much. He's a, you know, just punctual. He always has a smile on my face. I consider him my dear friend. And I was a teenager, you know, and I was like, Dad, you have lunch with everybody, you know, nurses, janitors, president of the hospital. And he said, you know, you have to take people for, you have to get to know people. He said, the president of the hospital may be an amazing man. He may also be a horrible person. So you have to get to know people. And he would always emphasize, he didn't have a drop of racism. He would tell me there's a Black child born in the desert of Africa to a mother who's dying, who can't produce enough milk to feed him. And there's a child being born to the royal family in England. He goes, where we're born is just a lottery of life. Anybody, wealthy, educated kids can become losers. Underprivileged people can become brilliant, make a difference in the world. So he, racism, classism, all the isms really, really bothered him. And he was really bothered about, well, he was a total feminist. He said how women, he would say, you know, the Philippines has had a woman president. South American countries, the most chauvinistic countries, have women. Why doesn't the U.S.? Why are they so afraid? And he would sing the praises of women, of how they are. And so it was really, I'm very thankful because I was raised very grounded. It wasn't a Southern California. I want a BMW. And I'm like, I didn't care. You know, I was like, whatever.
Yeah.
And it served me well because I saved money and I'm 59, but I was able to basically retire at 52.
Yeah.
Because of my choices. If I had been spending $50 a week on nails and $500 a month on car and this and that, and I wouldn't have had what I have today, you know? So it was really, you know, like to me, if you give me a Chanel purse as a gift, thank you, I'd love it. But I would never put that on a credit card, get in debt for that. Yeah. I can shop at a thrift shop and make it look great or get an amazing item that was on sale or a gift. I love fashion, but I've never been in debt. I've had zero debt. Because if I have the money, I buy it. If I don't, I don't.
You're one in a million. So, you're like the unicorn in the room.
I can't. Even cars. I saved money until I could buy a car cash because I realized very quickly I had a credit card with a $200 limit when I was 18 or something. And I realized that first it was like a pair of shoes for $70 and then I owed $200. I was like, what? Oh, because I bought dinner twice because, you know, I paid for a bridge toll. I was like, no, I can't do that. That's scary. See, so that scared me.
You're so smart. Very smart, actually. Smarter than a lot of other people I know.
I wish I could teach people, like young kids, about all that. Because it doesn't mean that you're living like a rat. You know what I mean? Right. Like you can still look good. You can still color your hair. You can still wear makeup and all that. But I taught business part-time at Washington University. And I would tell the girls, okay, there's micro spending. Let's talk about what you spend for coffee and a muffin. And then I would draw it out. Like if you made coffee at home, it would be 10 cents versus $5. And back then, minimum wage was $7 an hour. This was in St. Louis. And the one girl said, oh, so we're not allowed to spend $5 on a muffin and coffee. I said, you are not. Absolutely not. And they're like, why? I said, okay, a lawyer makes $600 an hour. Have you ever heard of a lawyer spending $600 on a coffee and a muffin? No. So why are you spending an hour's wage it's just not possible. It's like if you invited me on a private jet and you said, well, your share is $100,000. Absolutely not. I can't. It's not in my budget. So can I fly on a jet? No, I cannot. I better go on Southwest, you know? So it's not a thing about putting people down. You just can't, you know? And then I added, you know, how much would it be if you did your own hair? How much would it, you know, and every once in a while, somebody wants to go do something special, but on a regular basis. And it came to, everybody added up at least $6,000 a year. That's a car, a used car, you know? So micro spending can really kill people.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for saying that, because it's so true. And I had to learn that lesson when I graduated from college and I had so much debt, because when I graduated from college, they were offering credit cards to every single person under the sun. And nobody had really taught me how to actually spend wisely. So I found myself in trouble, but my stepmother sat me down and she's like, let's talk budgeting. And she taught me how to budget. And so she helped me kind of excavate myself from the very deep hole that I had put myself
in. Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we've talked about your father. Do you want to talk about your son at all? Just tell people who he was, what he was like, his personality. If not, that's okay.
No, I'll try. He was 100% selfless. He did everything, like firefighter training. He went to college, but then he went to study to be a paramedic and firefighting training. And then he went to the National Guard and training. I'm like, why do you have to do all the dangerous things? You know, his dad and I would crack up because his father's an artist and he's very stylish. And, you know, I would take him to Paris on a lot of these trips. And we sent him to the French American school. And then he grows up to be all butch and macho. And his dad and I are like, we did everything we could to make him gay. It didn't take. We would have been perfectly happy if he would have been like a gay interior designer. So parents, pay attention, it backfires. Don't be homophobic, because your child will be gay. Just let them do whatever they want. Things will work out the way they're supposed to be. And he spoke Spanish, French, English. He could cook. At one point, I had after the fashion industry, a French bistro. He cooked. He was friendly, loving. And again, he stood up for the underdog. There were some serious issues of racism in St. Louis, and he would stick up for the people, you know? Like one time I had a fashion event at my cafe and it was predominantly African-American and people were decked out, you know, like high-end people, gorgeous. The police came and they said, you need to break this up at 7 p.m. And I'm like, no, we're within time. We're not being loud or any. It's a fashion show. And then the cop told me, he goes, you don't want these people here. He goes, it's going to bring down your business. And I said, what people, sir? People from St. Louis? And then he saw that I wasn't a racist like him. And he goes, well, you know, it's just sometimes with Black people, fights can break out. I said, you know what? These people are professionals. I said, she's a newscaster. She's the producer for PBS. That's a doctor. That's a lawyer. I said, what are you, a cop? Because I know you guys are pretty violent. So maybe you're used to that atmosphere. And not against all cops. Thank you for what you do. But he just had that attitude. And so my son, he came back. They made him come back to apologize. And my son gave him a talking to, you know, and very respectfully, but stern. And he ran into a car one time that was in an accident and pulled the people out. He would never ask questions, like, just, you know, since he was little, like bringing kids home, like, oh, you know, his father died. Can he come stay with us? And always looking out for people. So he was incredibly sweet. And he had a lovely girlfriend, Savannah. We're still in touch and she suffered a lot. So, you know, every day it's, like I said, my life, I keep it upbeat. I listen to music. The dogs really help me get out, meet people. But I think gratitude, and I think when you go through something like this, you just realize how fragile it is, because if an 86-year-old man and a 30-year-old can die within a month, any one of us could go. So we have to live life responsibly. I can't say, oh my God, I'm going to blow my savings, but I don't pass up a chance. Like last weekend, my friends invited me to go horseback riding. It was just a stroll. And at first I was scared. I was like, I don't know. I mean, there's Christopher Reeves, you know, but I was like, okay, I'm going to go. So I said, yes. I said, if I'm scared, I'll just walk along with them or meet them for lunch. And I went and I got on the horse and I had a great time. So again, I pushed myself and I had one of the best afternoons. And if I wouldn't have gone, I would have missed it. So I tried to do the things that people who are no longer with us can do. And, you know, there's a word that I wish it was a known word. It's VILOMA. VILOMAH. It's Sanskrit, from Sanskrit times. And I wrote down the meaning. It means literally in Sanskrit, it means against the natural order, but it's used for parents who lost children. And I wish that was a part of our vocabulary, because it's, I can be at a party having fun, and if the topic comes up, I will start getting emotional. So if I meet you at a party and you tell me I'm a widow, I'm not going to say, hey, is your husband coming to dinner? Because being a widow told me you lost your husband.
Yeah.
If you tell me I'm divorced, I'm single. But with me, people ask me all the time, and it's a natural question, right? So do you have kids? And then the water works, right? So I wish that I could just say, no, I'm, you know, Viloma, and people would know she had kids or a child, but lost them. So, but that's the hard part, because it's a natural question, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think anyone who asks that question ever expects.
No. And it gets people, and it brings down the mood, because you're like, all of a sudden it's like, wah, wah, wah. You know, because they have empathy. So sometimes I just say, oh, it's a long story, I'll tell you later. And I change the subject, or when the topic is coming up, I excuse myself and go to the bathroom, because I just don't want to bring down the party, because people will feel bad, you know?
Yeah. Gosh, I'm so sorry. But I mean, really, thank you for sharing who he was.
Yeah.
In the world. And all I kept thinking when you were describing him was, oh my goodness, this legacy of just being of service that is just in your family. He was living into that. And it's so potent in your family. That's is really remarkable.
It really is. And I really believe in signs. And I sometimes I'm very just, I'm like, oh, I need a sign today. Well, when we went for the horses, I was like, my son would have loved this. And I just thought, okay, God, I need a sign. So they're showing us this ranch. It's this luxurious, fabulous ranch, you know, and it belongs to this Mexican athlete. I don't know what it's called, but it's like they ride horses. It's like a matador, but on a horse. Can you imagine the level of skill to be running? Like, I mean, I could barely go on a horse ride walking, and I was sore for 3 days. And these guys are doing, you know, anyway, so he's famous and he's at the level of like, whatever, the biggest celebrity. So my son's name was Pablo. So we get there and they're doing the overview and they're like, this is the ranch of Pablo Hermoso. Hermoso in Spanish means beautiful. So his name is Beautiful Pablo. And so it wasn't just like, oh, this man was named Pablo Garcia. No, his last name is Beautiful. And so it was Pablo Hermoso. And I was like, there it is. But I had just asked for the sign like 3 minutes before. And the lady says that. And it happens to me all the time. And it's not like I'm crazy grasping at straws, like the name starts with a P. It must be a sign. No, it's like a big sign, you know? And I always get signs like that. And something else that's important that I wanted to share with you about religion is that the way that it was, religion was explained to me, because I thought, oh, I don't know what to believe. So my dad said, here's a very simple way to read the Bible. he said, whenever you read the word heaven, it's your mind. When you hear the word earth, it's your body. So when it is, what's the verse that says on earth as it is in heaven? What is that?
Yeah, you're right. On earth as it is in heaven. Yeah.
Yeah. So on earth as it is in heaven. So your body is your temple. You respect it, and your mind. So if it says God in heaven, God is in your mind. Because I was having a hard time as a kid. I was like, there's an old man on the clouds. Does he not fall through? Like, you know, and I would get in trouble at school because they would talk about Noah's Ark. And I'm like, so how many animals were there? Because there's like a billion species. Like, did the lions eat the lambs? Like, how did that work? And the teachers were like, Araceli, sit down. And the class would be dying laughing, you know? And I'm like, did they bring fleas and ticks? Because they're animals. Like, I was just such a wise guy. And so that explanation made sense to me, because it's, you know, God, every time you hear the word God, heaven, it's your mind, and earth is your body. So if you want peace on earth, right? Peace in your body, health, not having nerves, anxiety, all those things. So that really helped put things into perspective.
Okay. I'm sorry, but that might be the most brilliant thing I've ever heard.
Just call me Sister Araceli. No, but for somebody who's an atheist, it could just be interpreted. Nobody has to, I mean, forget religion. It's just mind, body, and soul, right? You could apply that. You don't have to have a religion for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
I think you've just blown my mind, and I'm gonna have to go like think about this for the next few weeks. Seriously. You know, you're talking about these signs, and this sign is so beautiful that you just experienced while you were horseback riding. You know, the main question of the podcast is, I'd love for you to share something that you feel like you witnessed that was magical, miraculous, or mysterious. And, you know, just listening to you, I was thinking, my gosh, this legacy of just good works and being in the world, helping other people, frankly, is a miracle. And just how it's gone across the generations, like, that is very rare. That does not happen. But I don't want to, you know, project my own things on you. But if you'd like to share anything, I'd love to hear it.
Well, people need to see what the need is. And it's not, I'm not made of money. Like, helping the orphanage was putting ads on Facebook and saying, who can donate a house? You know, and somebody did, because they were 23 kids in two bedrooms. And then it's helping. I would go to the furniture companies and I'm like, how many beds can you donate? And they're like, we can't. And then I would find out the name of their competition and say, well, so-and-so donated four beds. And they're like, okay, well, they donate four beds. They hadn't yet. I wasn't lying. I was just forecasting the future and making it happen, right? So that's worth something. And then also, I made a comment one time on Facebook about Ajijic. I said, you know, San Miguel is so much more creative. A lot of the shops here in Ajijic are just, blah, you know, basic. And this American guy said, well, if you don't like it, B-I-T-C-H, leave. And I said, I don't like it. I'm going to do something about it. So I started my own thing called, so in Mexico, they have magical pueblos, right? So when a city's very quaint, they call it a magic city, magic pueblo. Ajijic is magic. So I started a business, no, a nonprofit called Negocios Mágicos, magical businesses. So I went to businesses owned by women that were in real need, and I helped them. So I did murals. I got volunteers that did murals. Mirrorless. I help them get credit card readers. I mean, they're $10. I'm not, you know, not saying that you need to be wealthy to do this. I taught them how to use it. Donated cell phones. I never accepted money. I didn't want any complications, but I did 12 businesses in 12 months. One lady had a flower cart. It was just like an old wooden thing. And somebody said, can you help her? She has cancer. She goes to chemo on the bus. She comes to work at her flower stand. I got this volunteer muralist and he made it look like a Parisian flower cart. You would not believe the beauty. And then I would have grand openings like HGTV, because the point was not for my own good. It was to promote the business. So we would post before pictures and then we'd say like, whatever, you know, August 1st is the grand opening, and like 100 people would come. So now they know about her. Now they can be her customers. And this particular lady died a few months later. The family kept running the business, but she told me when she was dying, she said, you know, I knew I was dying, but I want you to know that you made the last few months of my life feel like I lived like a queen. And when you hear stories like that, I'm not the only one who lost people, you know? So it was so healing. So for me, again, at any level, anybody with mourning, get out of your head, get out of your house, walk dogs. If you have an elderly neighbor that has a dog, say, hey, can I take your dog for a walk? You know, just to get out, to talk to people. I was crying and Cooper was young and he was very anxious. So I was like, fine, let's go for a walk. I walked straight down to the lake. There's a like a nautical club with a restaurant, and it was kind of raining. And I said, can I come in just to have coffee? So I sat, it was like a terrace, and I looked horrible. Like, I didn't want to talk to anybody, but there was a table of women laughing and having a good time. And one of them came over to see the dog. And I'm like, oh my God, how embarrassing. And I said, what are you guys celebrating? And they said, oh, our book won number one in 3 countries. And we're at the book fair in Guadalajara. And I said, what is it about? And she said, oh, it's a compilation of stories about women who overcame horrible things. And I said, oh, I'm in the process of overcoming. And I told her what I was doing with these women, that was how I said, I'm still obviously not well, but I'm working on it. And we talked and she said, I want you to talk to our publisher. I said, why? I'm not a writer. And this is before AI. This is like 5 years ago. So, you know, I couldn't even get help with that. But long story, talk to the publisher. She said, we want you in it. I was in the book the next year. It won again. And it was in Spanish. Then it was in English. We were invited to Austin to speak. I met these newscasters that, you know, has like near Univision from like that. And my father used to send me clips about these shows, you know, like if it was 60 Minutes or something equivalent.
Yeah.
And those were the people giving me an award. So going up there, and I told Adriana, one of them, I said, I'm sorry, I'm not being like a fangirl right now. Yes, you're fabulous. If it was like Barbara Walters, I said, but I'm just dying right now because I wrote this about my father. He adored you and you're giving me an award. And she told me, she said, well, we became friends and I actually spent a lot of time. She goes, don't become my friend. And I was like, okay, awkward. And she said, I have cancer. I have, the one that's incurable with women get, what is it? Cervical, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like confused with Spanish and English now. And she said, I have like 9 months tops to live. She looked beautiful. And she goes, but I'm going to keep working till the end because it's what I love. And I said, well, okay, but I can still be your friend. We became friends and I saw her. I flew out and she was in another city in Mexico. And I saw her up until like the day before she died. And we had a beautiful friendship. But, you know, talk about get up off your couch. I look like hell. I was crying. That's why I adore these dogs. And when I overly indulge them and treat them so well, they are my saviors, like my best friends, my therapist, because think about it. If I wouldn't have gotten up, I wouldn't have gone to that restaurant, wouldn't have met them, wouldn't have been in the book, wouldn't have had like a world tour. I spoke in Mexico City because I said yes. And also because I said, yeah. And I didn't lie. I said, I'm not a writer. And they're like, they'll help you. You know, we just want to get your story down. And so And like with you, do a podcast. Okay, sure. If I can help one person, I think people just need to get up and do something for others and get it. I mean, when you hear about a family of six died during COVID, they had a mother. You know what I mean? So a lot of us suffered a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a really powerful, powerful statement. You know, I mean, you weren't planning. Again, it was raining. The weather was terrible. You were feeling terrible, but you still got up and walked the dog. And guess what?
That changed my life. It changed my life, literally. Oh, and I was selling my house because whatever, I was time to treat the end. And at that day, they're putting up a sign that they're building at that club, a new building, condos. And I'm like, I'm moving here. I talked to them and I was like, I want a small place. I'm downsizing because it's just me. And I didn't have the energy to, I ended up getting a condo there. So that changed my life. You know, and it's really pushing yourself. I mean, I was wearing a hoodie. I had black eyes from crying. I had coffee breath. I was just like so hideous, but it doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter.
No. I mean, it's like the universe stepped in and, you being,
I'm telling you, I get slapped by the universe and God, like, get up, do it. You know, and the mistakes I've made in my life, which I've made a few, it's always because I didn't listen to my instincts. It was like, yeah, but maybe this person, maybe. No, there's no maybes. I'm going with my instinct from now on.
That's it. That's a wrap on this episode. I'm so grateful to Araceli for coming on the show and sharing all of her stories. I really, really encourage you to check out everything in the episode show notes. There's going to be all sorts of really super fun links, including to Bella's website page where you can see her modeling for Coach. And don't forget the book, Women Who Dare and Overcome Limits, stories of inspiration in difficult times. There will be a link for that as well, so you can buy this book and read about powerful women the world over who are living lives full of bravery and audacity. I need to thank Araceli for coming on the show and being so open and vulnerable and sharing her story of loss, but then also sharing her story of continuing on and committing to making this world a more beautiful place. And remember, everybody, I'm always looking for ratings and reviews. So when you listen to this podcast, wherever you listen, please do consider taking the time to write a little review or leave a rating. Thank you for listening. And here's my one request. Be like Araceli. Get off of the couch or get out of bed or walk through your front door. Don't ever give up. There's always going to be something magical waiting for you, something mysterious waiting for you, some good bit of beauty out there just waiting for you to leave your house and go on an adventure to meet it. Those good things are waiting out there for us. So be like Araceli and believe in them. And then get off of the couch and go out to meet your destiny.
I brought the books in Spanish and English. And also, you can edit this out if there isn't time.
Okay.
But I wanted to read this.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
So this, and I'm going to cry. So it says, presented to Dr. George Kopeloff, an outstanding doctor, a man of knowledge and faith. You came to our valley 2 decades ago and took everyone in who had nowhere to go. You listen intently through our anxiety and tears. You taught us to believe we could master our fears. With your fine sense of humor, discipline for yourself and for all, you taught us to believe in our dreams, to build new lives in spite of our faults. You will be missed in your office and in the halls, but will continue to beat in our hearts forever. From his patients.
Wow.
Wow. You know, and you think about people that die these days that were horrible. Yeah. And you go on their Facebook and there's nothing but nastiness.
Yeah.
And you think, what was your life? I'll be dead. I won't know. But hopefully there's not one bad thing about me, because when you live with love and you make a difference and you're a good friend.
Yeah.
I mean, how sad, right? To have nothing but horrible things said about you.
Yep.
And for a few bucks.
Yeah.
I don't want to be a billionaire. You know, if I can eat well, enjoy my dogs, have no debt, I'm happy. That's a billionaire for me.
Yeah. No, 100%. Yeah.
So the book is the Spanish one. It's Mujeres que se atreven y superan límites, women who dare and overcome limits. And well, and then it says that in English. And so it's stories of people who have had, you know, very challenging. I mean, there are stories from human trafficking to, you know, so anyway, so there's that. And I talked about basically what we shared about. I mean, I'm not a grief counselor, but if any advice can help anyone, and again, it's not about money, look around you. Like, so did you, let's say you lost your spouse, that you cook for them on Sunday. How about you find a neighbor that's an overwhelmed single mom or an elderly person or somebody financially in trouble, and you cook for them, you know?
Yeah.
Invite them to dinner. Just get out, because when you're indoors all the time, you can go crazy. Trust me.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
You don't have to finance a trip to a third world country to help. You can help right there at home, you know? And if you have the blessing to live in a very upscale neighborhood, you know what? Find out who needs you somewhere nearby.
Yeah.
And it's not even about money. Maybe it's just time, right? It's reading a book to somebody or helping babysit or something like that.
I have to say that those covers are gorgeous, by the way.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, they did a great job, and it's a women publishers, and they do so much. I mean, if I started any venture, they would 100% back me and promote me, and they're not about money. Like, oh, we'll do it for this much. They'll just share with their entire network. They're very, very sincere, very authentic.
And we need more of that in this world. So hooray.
We sure do. So, oh, I have to tell you one more thing that if you can squeeze it in. Okay. In San Miguel, my first friend, she came from the Jewish community and she brought a gift basket. And her name is Audrey Jacobs. And this is so telling of, that was the first person. I mean, I knew some people that had moved her, but the new person that I met. So she started something. She was a matchmaker in the U.S. and she has a TED talk. She's very engaging and brilliant and loving. And her TED talk is great. It's about connections, you know, and so I really liked her. So she said, you know, I put out on Facebook how many people would be interested in a matchmaking, you know, organization. And in 2 days, I got like 300 comments. So I'm going to do it here. And then she said, would you be my partner and handle all the bilingual? Because we really want it to be integrated not an afterthought of it's for Americans and we'll translate. No, it's 100 because there's a lot of people from Mexico City and Querétaro who have homes here and they come part time. So they're all multicultural events. And so I did the whole website, the logo. She's doing a million thing behind the scenes and she knows people here. We had our first event, which was a lecture. The room was for 60. We had 60 people and waiting list line out the door waiting. And it's called Love in San Miguel. And everything is most of our people. We had like 60% men and people say, oh, there's no men. Oh, there's men. And everybody is not everybody. A lot of people are bilingual. The Mexican people here that attended are super. The door slam, a window slam. The people are bilingual. And that we offer, it's things that are going to have simultaneous interpretation, Spanish, English. So I'm partnering with her on that. And it's for romance, but it's also for friendship. Like we have men's only events because there's men that became widowers or divorced and they don't know how to go out and make friends. So, and these are friendships that it's not just like, hey, you're an American, come to a mixer. No, it's going to be like-minded people. So if we went for an art show, we like art. If we went to opera, we like opera, right? And younger and older. And so I'm so excited. But again, I met her. We clicked. She's so kind. And I said, yes, I could have said no. But I mean, she's the matchmaker. I'm not doing that. And but with our skills together, like me doing the website, the concept, the marketing, we all have things to bring to the table. And we love people. We can talk to a broom, like it doesn't matter. So we will, just today I was talking to this young man and I was like, you need to join. Listen, I'm not creepy. I'm not a cougar. You're not for me. I'm just telling you, you need to join. And he was laughing. He's like, yeah, I'll join. But I mean, like, I'll talk to anybody. I have no shame. Like, I don't care. But look how wonderful. I wasn't planning. People plan too much, right? Like, and then I'm going to study to be a coach and I'm going to study. No, don't study. Just go do it. I didn't sign up for a course. No, I'm doing it. I'll use my skills that I'm an expert at. She'll use hers. So, but it's saying yes. I could have been like, well, I don't know. I was like, yeah, let's do it.
Oh my gosh.
Loveinsanmiguel.com.
Loveinsanmiguel.com. I'll add a link so everybody can check it out too.
Yes. And if they come visit, they can join and see what's happening. Maybe they'll fall in love and we'll catch them here.
I love it.